Okay, so because I was gone last Sunday, we took the detour to talk about the Elijah story. And we're going to go back to the track that we started previous to that. So that's been like a week and a half. But let's review a little bit. We asked this question, when a decision is being made, what do you think the average modern American does first? Think first, feel first, or act first? Probably feel, right? Now, maybe they act just impulsively without thinking or whatever. But so often, it's kind of a feel, then they do, and then later on, they think reasonably about it. Of course, we can all fall into that so easily ourselves, right? Our feelings guide our actions and guide our thinking. Well, God's word tells us not to trust in our feelings. The heart is deceitful above all things. The heart is desperately sick, and who can understand it, right? The heart lies to you, and it is broken, and you can't even fully understand it, right? Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be saved. So contrary to what every song on the radio tells you, what every Disney movie tells you, don't listen to your heart, don't follow your heart, don't trust in your own thinking. Don't let your feelings dictate your life decisions. Okay, so we've, you know, of course, been talking about this. Much better is to recognize that our feelings will come and go. The feelings don't stay, but wisdom stays. So we try to think wisely, think clearly, then act, knowing that our feelings will eventually follow, right? So think before you act and fill yourself up with God's word to think better and to keep our thinking wise and right and righteous. And then we do what God says. We always do what God says. And then you'll feel different later. The feelings will follow. So we talked last time that the brain drags the guts. And we talked about how, kind of a vivid description there, and just how kind of an odd picture that is. So I said, well, you know what, surely AI can generate some kind of great picture. So this is the best one I got. The brain dragging the guts. It's kind of weird. So here's the principle. The principle that we need to key in on here is that we will think differently when we act differently. So we need to think as best as we can, and then that'll change our feelings. But it's more than just that. It's that we improve our thinking by improving our actions. Our behaviors will change our mind and our heart. So we've seen this, you kind of talk about it in some common sense kinds of ways. You say, if you don't like somebody, pray for them. Pray for your enemies. And you start praying for them, and you start having a different attitude towards them. There's even a principle in psychology. You start doing things for people, you start doing nice things, and you actually just start liking them more, right? So good marriage advice. You want to help your marriage? Do good things for your spouse, and eventually those feelings will catch up and your thoughts will change and all that. So the point is that our behaviors, our actions, change our mind and change our heart. Now, it may take a while. In fact, it may take a really long time. But our behaviors and our actions do end up changing our mind and our heart. But a surefire way to change our thinking is to change our actions. So we're going to go to the worksheet here in a minute, Philippians 4. These things do, and the God of peace will be with you. Pray for your enemies long enough. Keep serving your brother long enough. And in other words, what we see is a feedback loop, to maybe use a fancy term, a feedback loop that's very beneficial to us. So the point is that it's not just you think first and then act later, but actually the things we do come back and impact our thinking. Does that make sense? The things we do come back and impact our thinking. So that's the basics. I want to keep going with it, but basically what we're trying to get across is a lot of the times it's not just I try to improve my thinking by working on the thinking. Sometimes I improve my thinking by what I do, right? And that's going to actually help my thinking. And of course, the unit we're in is principles of the pit. And so if I'm really in the pit, sometimes I just need to act in a certain way and give that the time to help my thinking if my thinking is bad enough. So that kind of idea. Does that make sense so far? Okay. So let's keep going with this, the think, do, feel idea. What were principles 3 and 4 of the pit? Number 3 was, the deeper you are, the less rational that you are. And principle number 4 was, therefore, the less effective it is to directly address the thinking, to just try to change your thinking by working on the thinking. So when a person's deep in the pit, telling them just to think better is not going to be very helpful. And if they're particularly in an irrational place, sometimes they just need to improve their thinking by doing, right? That's what's going to help them the most. I think you see this with Job's friends, right? Job's friends show up, and is Job's thinking perfect? No. But do they, like, help him, comfort him, get him a good meal, like, bring him forward in life? No, they just keep, you're saying wrong, you're thinking bad, and they just keep smacking him for bad thinking, right? Well, when you're in the pit, just addressing the thinking like that, what does that just do to Job? How does Job respond to that? Just makes it worse. He's just angry. You guys don't get it. And they don't. That's true. They don't get it, right? They should have known that people in the pit say exaggerated things. They should have cut him some slack. Job says that. You should know that a person in misery, their words are like wind, you know, that idea. So an everyday illustration of this is that when you're in a bad place, just trying to tell them to improve their thinking does not help. So your child climbs out of bed, right? It's 9:30 at night. And you thought that they were down, they're not down, right? Your child climbs out of bed and they say this: Daddy, I'm scared about going to Florida because I read in a book about an alligator that crawled through a screen door in Florida and almost ate a family. And Grandpa's house has a screen door. Okay, do you see what's going on, right? They read a book that at one point in time, an alligator goes through the screen door, and now they don't want to go to Florida because Grandpa in Florida has a screen door.
And it's based on a true story.
I can neither confirm nor deny. The details have been changed to protect the innocent. So we respond by saying, right? So do you think that a rational explanation of statistics and a rational explanation of percentages will help ease the child's fears? You say, you know what? That almost never happens, right? That only happens like once every 10 years or so. So I just don't think we have to worry about it. Well, do you think that will help the child? No. Is the child in that place because of a rational analysis of statistics? No. So that's not going to be what helps them out of it, right? Will endless consolation about that probably won't happen, will that be helpful? No. What about smacking them with the think better stick? Think better. No, okay. So Lynn Lyons, she's not a believer, but she's a child psychologist, therapist, who has really good material. I recommend her stuff in a general sense. One mom with an anxious kid, OCD kid, I recommended Lynn Lyons. The mom texted me back. She's like, Lynn Lyons should be a believer. All her stuff is so biblical. Lynn Lyons, she tells the story of a family that have this anxious girl. And this girl is very anxious, and she's become fixated on robbers coming into the house and, you know, abducting her and her teddy bear and whatever, right? So the parents, they love their girl. They're trying to be helpful. They don't know how to be helpful. And so they spend like $50,000, like a crazy amount, on a home security system, right? So they install this high-tech, super advanced home security system because that should help their daughter to sleep better, feel better, help out, right? Well, that works for a little while until their daughter is watching some kind of like Mission Impossible movie where they break in and get through a home security system, right? And then now the $50,000 is out the window because now she's not comforted at all because she realized, wait a second, people can break through that. So then they say, well, okay, we're just going to get her a dog. We're going to get her a big dog, right? And the dog is going to live in her room, maybe snuggle on her bed. That'll help her feel better. Well, then they're having all kinds of troubles. Apparently, the dog doesn't want to live in the room. They get the dog, but the dog wants to be downstairs, and they're trying to keep the dog in the room. Anyways, they're going through all of that, right? So the point is, there's better ways of handling things, of course. So we'll talk later on in this quarter about what a good response would be. So I don't want to spend too much time with that, but the point is that a lot of times we get ourselves in situations where we're trying to give a rational explanation, And that's not what's needed in the moment, and that's not going to be what's helpful. So the bottom line I'm trying to get across is we don't help people who are in the pit by beating on the think better drum. They're probably thinking as best as they can. And there's even some good cognitive behavioral therapy stuff that doesn't quite get this, that says, think, analyze your thinking, what do you really believe? You don't know what you really believe. You're in the pit, things are awful. So that's not gonna be what's helpful, right? They're probably thinking as best they can, they're probably barely holding on. So the think, do, feel model is helpful, but if all you know to do is tell people, well, think better and your feelings will follow, what if you're not thinking very good? And what if you know your thinking isn't right? What if you're a broken person and your thinking isn't very good? That's not gonna be very encouraging, right? So another way of saying this, people deep in the pit are not gonna be able to think their way out of the pit. If they could, they wouldn't be in the pit. So they're gonna need the improved thinking that comes from better decisions, from different choices, from different behaviors. That's what's gonna be so helpful to their marriage, to their fears, to their depression, things like that. So what I'm presenting right now is the AB model. It's very similar to think, do, feel, but it's just more nuanced because think, do, feel is true, but if you're not thinking well, you're like, well, how do I fix that? Well, the answer is change your behaviors. So A stands for awareness, B stands for behaviors. When I say the AB model, that's not just code for like 1, 2. I was talking to someone recently and he brought up the AB model. I was like, good, he's been listening to my class. This is good. This is good. And he's like, oh, I said AB. He's like, what does the A stand for? I was like, what does the A stand for? Awareness. Like, it's AB. I was like, oh, I thought that was just like 1, 2. It's like, no, A is for A and B is for B. Okay. So A is for awareness, B is for behaviors, right? That's the idea. Okay. So you have some level of awareness, right? You have some level of, let's just use a drug analogy because I think that's a pretty easy one to see. I shouldn't go back to the drugs. I really want to right now go back to the drugs. But I know I shouldn't, and I know right now it makes all the sense in the world, but honestly, this morning, I was really glad that I hadn't gone back to the drugs. I'm feeling really torn right now. I have some awareness I shouldn't do this, but I'm also feeling very pulled. So you have even just minimal awareness. Well, guess what? When you do the right thing and you make a different choice, then that is gonna help you so much. So even if you just have minimal awareness of, I've been in this pit before. I was in this pit yesterday. I keep falling into this pit. I can do better than that. Minimal awareness, make a different behavior, but guess what? When you make better choices and you have different behaviors, that goes back and improves your awareness. Do you see that? That really helps you. Oh yeah, yesterday I waited 5 seconds before giving into that compulsion, that worry. I think I can do that again today. I bet I can wait 10 seconds today and 20 seconds tomorrow, that kind of thing. So greater awareness, well guess what? Guess what greater awareness leads to? Hint, it starts with a B. Greater awareness is just gonna lead to better change behaviors, which then goes back and improves our awareness, that whole idea. So it's an upward spiral is the point. We do our best to increase awareness of what's going on. Yeah, I start to learn my pitfalls. Oh, it's after work, or it's when I wake up, or when I'm going to bed. My tendencies. When my wife and I have an argument, that's when I'm tempted to drink. Oh, we just had an argument. I want a drink. I've been here before. I see what's going on, right? Awareness of your tendencies. You start noticing patterns. You start noticing your emotions. So all that awareness should lead to changed behaviors, different behaviors, right? Different choices. But that then comes back and improves my thinking, improves my awareness. If we're talking neurology, I'm firing different neurons. And last time, when my wife and I got in a fight, I went and got drunk again. This time, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make a different choice, a new neural pathway. I'm forging new territory here. And guess what? The more I do that, the easier that gets. So that's the goal. Awareness leading to better behaviors, leading to better awareness, leading to better behaviors, back and forth. So if I can keep improving my thinking and my awareness, that keeps helping me to improve my behavior, that idea. So that all goes back to the principle, we think differently when we act differently. The whole point of this is just to improve awareness, improves behaviors, which improves awareness, all of that. So the goal is to create an upward spiral of growing awareness, some good thinking about what's happening, which then leads to improved behaviors. I make better decisions, which circle back and improve our awareness and thinking. So here's my beginner's animation, right? Awareness to behaviors, back improving awareness, back to improving behaviors, back to improving awareness, back to, you get the idea, right? So that's the idea. The AB model is, even if I have minimal awareness of, I'm learning what my tendencies are, I'm learning, wait a second, I've been here before. Well, then I can make new decisions. I can make new choices, better choices. That's gonna create new neural pathways and all that. But the more I do that, that actually improves my thinking. And I can then build on that and grow my awareness, which then grows my behaviors. And that's a much more hopeful model than just saying, think better. See that? You're not just telling them to think better. Say, the thinking you have right now, you can build on that. And you can improve your behaviors, and guess what? The more choices you make, the better choices you make, that ends up coming back and helping you think better. Does that make sense? So that AB model is, I think, a more helpful model for people who are in the pit. Comments and questions on that whole idea. Yeah, Heather.
If this is in a later class, just push it forward. But when I think about Job's situation, he talks about them being miserable comforters. Well, that's a feeling that he did not feel comforted by them. So are you going to get into later how the feelings affect these people deep in the pit as well? That it's not just, like, they could have offered some comfort, you're not alone, that might have helped improve his feelings.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, Lawrence and I have talked earlier in our marriage about being on like an emotional seesaw. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I'm really upset and he's super logical and encouraging, I feel the need to get more upset and demonstrative about how really serious this mm-hmm. is. And he's trying to calm me down. Like, if you could just come this way on the seesaw and acknowledge that this is bad, then I would go, all right, there's nothing in the world, right?
Yes.
And I wonder about, are you going to talk about that a little bit?
So we'll have a whole lesson or two on that, how we help each other, and the need to encourage each other, meet others where they're at. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. And so that I think that absolutely does help encourage, because I'm not so alone. That's what God does, is meets me where I'm at then. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll hit on some of that, and then when we get to that point and there's more to say, then just keep elaborating on that. Yeah. So I think that trying to validate where people are at, as opposed to minimize. What can often happen is, if a child does not feel listened to, then you're actually just kind of increasing that fear, because, you know, hey, I'm really afraid there's something, you know, in my closet. And you're like, no, stupid kid, like, there's nothing in your closet. Well, then they're like, I need someone to listen to me. No one's listening to me. Like, I really, and so meeting them where they're at, that doesn't mean you engage in behaviors that make the fear worse. But you can at least meet them where they're at and be like, oh, wow, I can tell you're really upset. Why don't you tell me about what you're thinking, and kind of go there with them so that they feel heard. And then that they're going to be able to get out of the pit better in that way. Okay, so learning by doing. Philippians 4, a very good kind of passage that's talking about learning by doing. The translation here offered, I think, kind of highlights what's going on. They're in the Greek. Whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, he says, these things think about. What you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, these things do. So that just kind of really pulls out the parallel there. These things think about, and then these things do, and the God of peace will be with you. Okay. So that was kind of the basics of the homework, was just, do you see any learning by doing, which is what we've been talking about. We learn by different behaviors, different choices, right? I'm going to grow not just by thinking differently, but also by making different choices, learning by doing. Okay, what did you see in here that has to do with learning by doing?
Back up a few verses, there's some other things listed too. There's the rejoice, there's the be gentle, and then in these verses, there's the trust in the Lord no matter what, so don't be anxious or calm down, you might put it in that way.
Okay, yeah. Of course, even on the screen, there's some verses I didn't draw attention to, so that's helpful, thank you. Don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, bring your request to God, and then the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Now, there's a whole lot to even say about that paragraph. Other thoughts?
Imitate. Yeah, he said, imitate me. And it's funny you kind of touched on all that this morning in your lesson.
Well, yeah, it's the next chapter. Yeah, it's focused for it.
Imitate what he did and said and lived out.
Okay.
So you would also want to imitate people who are like him.
Yes, good. These things do. And then what's the promise when we do these things? Peace. The God of peace will be with you, right? And so sometimes it's what I need to do that then leads to peace. How does that show up in this first paragraph about anxiety and prayer?
I mean, like, when you tell God about it, the peace of God will be given to you.
Yes, yes. And so what we so often do is, I forget, have we done the thing where we say we give it to God, but then I pull it back? We do that? Right. It's like Hezekiah offering the prayer to God. Actually, let me take that back here and worry about it first, and then I'll give it to you. So another illustration of that is sometimes we show God our rock collection. We have this backpack filled with bricks, rocks, stones, cement, cinder blocks, and I lay it down and I say, God, I've been carrying this rock around, and it's really awful, really heavy. And then this cinder block, this one pokes me in the back, and it's awful. And instead of giving that to God and leaving it there and getting it out of my backpack and surrendering that, I just do show and tell with the rocks in my back. And then I put them right back in my backpack and put it back on. Is that the way to do it? No, I need to give it to God and then actually leave it there, right? Don't be anxious, but in everything, with thanksgiving, that's me working on my attitude, working on my thinking. I pray, let my requests be made known to God. But is that so that I can keep worrying about them? No. 1 Peter 5, as the passage says, cast your burdens upon him. So I don't keep carrying the burden. I bring them out. I talk to God about them, but I don't put them back in my backpack. I put them down for God to work on, and then I can have peace. God's at work. He's the one who can solve this. And he's on the job, so I can then lay those burdens down. Good. Any other thoughts from this? Yeah, Lauren.
Well, I like the prayer because and supplication because you're having to vocalize.
Yep.
Because sometimes we haven't totally put what we're anxious about into words, and so it's not just. I mean, obviously, you can say I'm anxious. I don't know why. Help me. But just having to vocalize what you're really anxious about can sometimes lessen the anxiety.
It really does.
And then doing that with thanksgiving. So acknowledging also, like, you have seen me through these other things. So just kind of all of those things together is what helps you, I think, lay it down and leave it there. The
yes.
Recognition that you have handled things before, so I can't leave this here.
Absolutely. Do the psalmists do things like this? They articulate what's going on. Bad people are in the city trying to kill me. God rescue me, right? And then they may bring up previous rescues, or you've helped our forefathers, and you'll, you know, continue to help us, you know, those kind of things. So that puts it in a better context, right? So all of that, then I'm going to do some things differently. I'm going to pray about it, and then I'm going to do my best to walk away. Will those thoughts still keep coming to me? Sure. But then that becomes my job. Well, I'm not trusting in God. I need to let that go and let God work on that. Does it mean you're only allowed to pray about it once a week? No, you can pray about it more. But as long as that's an act of faith in this relationship, I'm praying about it, but then I'm really doing my best to let God work on it and keep dropping it as best as I can. That idea. Good. Lawrence, was your hand up? No, it was Heather, sorry.
I've struggled in the past with letting my request be made known to God versus to Lawrence or to my girlfriends or to anybody who will listen, which means that I'm just reinforcing whatever the problem is. I'm not really going to the only one who can provide a solution.
Yeah, very good. Miriam?
Well, Philippians 4:8, which I assume you're going to get to in a minute, is what we all think about when we think about the peace of God. And before I say anything about those verses, when I was in high school, a girl gave a talk in our girls' religious class training thing. And she took an apple and said, you know, if we have bad things in our life, like depression or worried, or doing things wrong. Let's pull that out. Let's get rid of that. And so she pulls out these plugs as she goes one by one. And she says, are we finished? I mean, are we now whole? No, we're not. We're just somebody who's got holes in us that need to be filled up with the right things. And then she put new plugs in that were very much like Philippians 4:8. So if we don't fill up our minds with what is good and right and lovely, all of these, with excellence, then we don't have anything good to dwell on.
Right.
And so our anxiety is going to just keep growing.
Yeah, that's right. So that'll be one of our big principles when we are talking later on in the quarter, of this idea of fill the void. Right, get rid of the bad, but then fill with good. So that is huge. That's absolutely right. Okay, so noticing here, oh, I'm anxious. Oh, I need to do something about that. I'll just worry all day. Wait, no, that's what I did yesterday. Let me do something different today. So notice, oh, I'm anxious. Take action, right? Choose to pray. Notice what I'm thinking about, right? Awareness, that's the AB model. Awareness. Oh, I'm not thinking, that's just not true. I keep thinking things, that's not even true. Right? Choose to focus on other things, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable. And then Paul's life and teachings model that. Do these things and peace will follow, right? There's going to be some things I need to do differently, but that does come back, circle back, and improve my thinking. So, learning by doing, awareness. Notice what you're thinking about. Notice that you're anxious. And then choose to focus on other things, right? Choose to pray. Do the things Paul did. Do the things that Paul taught, and peace will follow. Okay. Biopsychosocial, spiritual elements here. Kind of, this is that picture is the thinking guy. So the thinking we kind of hit on here. Paul focuses on our thinking. What are you thinking about? That's huge, right? What am I thinking about? Work on what your thinking should focus on. What we think about matters. Thankfulness, right? And everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. So work on our thinking. What we think about matters. Thankfulness is going to be a helpful, impactful thing. Anything else you want to add with the thinking piece here? The body. That's the brain and the body guy. Peace, emotion, guards our heart. So we haven't hit on this phrase too much. The peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Peace helps us guard our heart. Can you think of people in the Bible who became very upset, and in that being upset, made very bad choices? Can you think of some Bible stories of characters who become upset, even specifically like anxiety, they'll be anxious, got very afraid and made bad choices? Yep.
Saul.
What was he afraid of?
Worried somebody's going to take over his kingdom, worried about David.
Yep.
All kinds of bad choices.
Yeah, absolutely. What about even, and even earlier, in he says, Samuel said, wait for me 7 days. I can't wait. And he offers the sacrifice, right? And so the peace of God, if he would have trusted in God, that would have guarded his heart, guarded his mind. He would have made better choices. So peace guards our mind. Do these things. Action with your body, right? Pray a prayer. Act like Paul. And that will help you to conquer worry and anxiety. So don't just think better, but also do things that will help you. Okay, relational. Any relational things in here?
If you go back to that gentle verse that's right before that, it says, let that be seen in front of all people.
Okay.
So I think all these traits, the rejoicing, the being gentle, the calming down. These are all Christian leadership type principles that if you are doing that in your community, people are gonna look to you and say, well, why are you like this? Why aren't you anxious like we are? Why are you calm? Why are you being gentle? Why aren't you upset and angry and all the time? And
yeah.
What are you rejoicing about? You know, so these are things that make a Christian's life different. So definitely social.
Yeah, and stand out before other people. Good. Yeah, and who is it, of course, that we're trusting in?
Relationship with God.
Relationship with God, right? Heather?
I was also thinking about just relationship with others. They had to listen to what Paul was saying. We're listening to somebody's teaching, can be part of this. And then doing is going to have to involve some other people at some point because we don't do the vacuum.
Yeah, and they're not alone in this. Paul's doing these things. Other people are doing these things. And you're doing. You're part of a community that's doing these things, right? Yeah, you're all active in these things together. Trust in God leads to peace. That's a relationship here. How you think about other people impacts you. I think a lot of this is think what's true and honorable and fair about other people, right? Sometimes we are thinking such angry thoughts about people, like, okay, that's not really fair. I think that's this. Think what's true and honorable and fair and just and pure about other people. Modeling by Paul, right? Who he is, being like him. Hey, Marianne?
There's also the good repute, which I think is kind of in there, and it's a little different slant, because to be doing things of good repute, that means it's our reputation.
Yeah, commendable, excellence, worthy of praise. Mm-hmm. Others, good. Very good. Okay. So we learn by doing, we improve our thinking by improving our actions and our behaviors. That's the AB model. So what we're going to do is start on the addiction piece. That's kind of the other big thing here in the How We Struggle unit, is talking about addiction and slavery. So we'll just do what we can today with this, and I don't have homework, but there should be homework in upcoming classes. Okay, so no surprise, addiction is one of the easiest ways that we get into the pit. The best way to get out of the pit of addiction is to never get in there in the first place, right? Well, for some people, that's too late, so we're trying to help them. Of course, it's easier said than done, right, is to not get in the pit in the first place. But most addictions are created by ourselves. That's obviously not true of every single addiction, but most addictions are things that we have brought on ourselves. And 1 Corinthians 6 gives us a root, sorry, I read that wrong, gives us a great description of the root problem of addiction. So 1 Corinthians 6:12, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but I will not be dominated by anything. Now, he doesn't mean there Christians can just do anything they want. And he's not trying to say that, you know, all things are lawful, like there's no such thing as sin anymore. But even with lawful things, what are the two criteria that even with lawful things, I want to ask myself these things? What are the two criteria we see?
Helpful.
It may be lawful, but not helpful, right? I may be, it's not a sin in and of itself, but it's not helping me. And what's the other criteria?
Will be controlled by it.
Controlled by it, dominated by it, become enslaved to it, all those ideas. So something may be fine in itself, but not helpful, or it might be enslaving me. So some addictive things are just sinful, right? Illicit drugs, becoming enslaved to lust, enslaved to greed, drunkenness, yeah, other chemicals. You got it, right? Some of those things are just sinful. But there are some things that aren't sinful in themselves, but they're just not helpful for the Christian life, right? They enslave me. They distract me. That's what Jesus said in the parable of the sower. Sometimes our seed just isn't growing. We're not growing spiritually just because of the distractions and the cares of life. So just because it's not sinful in itself, so I'll be enslaved to it, that's not Christ's will for our life. So some things are not sinful, but they can have mastery over us or dominate us or control us or make us its slave. So we want to be mindful of those things too. Christ is our Lord and nothing else should be. I really want to be controlled by Christ. So a small and painful list of not sinful things, modern things that can become unhelpful or can control us and literally can become addictive, right? So screens are a huge thing for us, right? So by screens, I'm including most social media. Is there a way to do social media without a screen? Like, I don't think so, right? It
used to be a phone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, social media used to be the, what did you call it when the whole, everyone on your block?
Party line.
Yeah. That was the original social media, right? Like listening to other people's phone conversations. And now you just like go on Facebook and you have a world of conversations to jump in on, right? Most video games, I guess I mean by that, addictive, I'm sure why I said most there. Obviously video games include a screen, otherwise it's not a video game. videos, most TV, most movies, like all these things, right, just have such potential to be addictive for us. So of course, medicine and drugs, right? So pain meds. Julianne's gonna have surgery on Monday, not tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, next Monday. Will she take pain meds afterwards? Yes. Does she need to be careful about not getting addicted to those pain meds? Yes. Now she does a great job. She's more careful than I would be. She's like, no. I'm like, take them. So she's very good. She got off the last surgery, she got off her pain meds ahead of schedule. So she does great, but she's very mindful of that. And Christians need to be wise about that, right? They're helpful, but they're dangerous. Just be wise about that. Alcohol, of course, can become addictive. Caffeine can become controlling. So not to be psycho about that, I have caffeine every day because I think that's helpful for me, but we do need to be wise about that. Sugar can become addictive, right? And just become really controlling, and we get in terrible moods, etc. So just things we need to be mindful of, right? So the goal, the only criteria is not, well, it's not sinful. Well, if it's controlling me, it's impacting me, it's negative, it's unhelpful, then it's going to need to go. Thoughts or comments on that?
You left a big one out. Sports.
Sports. Yeah. Yes. So if it was just a matter of listening to the radio, right, the old school, less concerned there, right? Like the family gathered around the radio on Saturday evening to listen to the Yankees play or something. But today, sports is really kind of combined with screen. It's not just, it's like the whole package, right? It's the fantasy leagues, it's the screens, it's the endless commentary that Phil, you could read all day about. So it really is this full package that can be very controlling, very enslaving.
You also didn't put food on there in general. But,
right.
You know, food.
5 minute warning.
Food is manufactured to be addictive.
Sure. Sure. And we just have food around that we can easily kind of. It's accessible and cheap, so we can lean into it as emotional support in a way that's not helpful. It's really amazing how easy for those things to be. I remember when I'm checking out at Walmart, and there's like those tourney things of little things of vodka. And you're like, it's just like $1.50, right? And you're like, you can't even leave Walmart without them like peddling cheap liquor for you, right? When you're leaving. And my carriage used to say this. My carriage said, this is the state of our country. We pay people like Weight Watchers. We pay people so they can help us not eat the food that I bought and put in my freezer. And you think about that, you're like, oh, we're in trouble. You know, it's like, we pay people to help me not eat the food that I bought and put in my freezer. So that's the world we live in, right? Okay, so we're going to start talking about dopamine. And that's a word that some of you may be aware of. Others may be like, dopamine? So we're going to, if you've never heard the word dopamine before, you're going to hear the word dopamine like 400 times on Wednesday. And talk about what that is. But we live in a dopamine-driven world. Essentially what that is it's the brain chemical that drives this want, that drives a craving, and algorithms on your phone and Facebook and internet shopping and all these casinos, what makes gambling so addictive, is all based on this dopamine idea. So it's the reward response in the brain that then becomes connected from the reward to make me want it more, right? So you can see why God gave us that system where, you know, when we didn't have food just lying around, where it's just easily accessible, you know, I'm going through the forest and I come across an orange tree, right? I'm living in the days of, you know, Abel and Cain, and I come across an orange tree and I taste it and it's like, this is delicious, like this is so sweet. You know, I want more of this, right? So I go back to it and that kind of idea. Well, that want that the sugar gave me is fine when it's, you know, you're living off the land. But when you have it so accessible, it becomes a problem, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's like a feel-good hormone. It's linked to pleasure, linked to satisfaction. More specifically, it's the want that drives you to want that thing. Okay, so when you're in your favorite store, That could be a sporting goods store, it could be the grocery store, it could be a thrift store, it could be IKEA, whatever it is. And you have that, like, I've got to have it. Like, whoa, I got to throw these things in my cart right now so nobody else finds it. Like, that, like, feeling overwhelmed and kind of high and excited and grabby with stuff, dopamine, full swing. That you, I want that, I got to have that, right? When you're shopping online and it says, you know, mattress sale today and today only, and you're like, it's 11:15 p.m. Like, I've got 45 minutes to figure out my mat, like that, like, rush, and I gotta have it. All that's dopamine, right? The want hormone that drives you to want the thing that gave you the dopamine hit. So it makes something feel rewarding, so I wanna keep doing it, right? So it really fuels motivation. And so the feeling of you've been working hard all day and you've put siding up and it looks awesome, that's dopamine. It's great, God gives us that. I've been working hard, it's been painful, but now I feel good about the project I finished. That's very good. God's given us that dopamine to feel good about that. And that's a great feeling, and God gave it to us to be a great feeling. So it fuels motivation because you go, man, I worked hard on that, I feel good. I want to do more work, and I feel good about the work that I've already done, right? Giving you a sense of pleasure and reward. So healthy ways to get dopamine are activities that are enjoyable. So good food, winning a game, making a basket, good music, exercise. When I put that onto the first quarter, they were like, making a basket, like weaving a basket? No, I'm not talking about weaving a basket, I'm talking about making a bet. And when you're playing basketball and you make a basket, you make a basketball goal, that feels very good. That's the dopamine release. So I kept it in there because I was like, well, that's funny. Now, it could be that for you, weaving a basket is like, you feel so good about yourself after basket weaving. But no, this is about making a basket, or making a soccer goal, or hitting a home run, or making that catch. All of that fuels. So if you've never gotten into sports and never enjoyed sports, it's because the pain has always been too much for the dopamine to override it. But once you get to, you're like, oh, this is so much fun, and because you're enjoying it and it's satisfying, that's when people start enjoying that sport. That's why golf, to me, like golf, like, oh, like, it's just painful. There's no satisfaction. I just hate everything I'm doing. So, okay, yeah, Stephen.
I would like to reach on the other side of that because a lot of those are related to sports and quote unquote fun activities. But when you're addicted to work, like I'm borderline addicted to work, it runs in my family. There's an element
in the class
on a day like yesterday, and you can't get better weather. You have fresh air in your lungs, you have sunshine on your skin. That in itself is releasing dopamine. So when you put up 100 bales of hay, it hurts at the moment, but man, does it feel good within tomorrow and you got animals to feed?
Yep.
So there's an element that's can be used for good, but it's also controlling.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, and of course, different personalities are going to be more.
Right.
Tend to go down that road, right? Anyways. So we'll pick up there. There's more healthy ways, achieving a goal, anticipation, general health things, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, thank you all.